Welcome to the Rock Church and World Outreach Center. We pray that this message will strengthen and encourage you. Now here's a message from one of the pastors here at the Rock.
I love this verse because David served the purpose of God in his generation. You girls have a purpose from God to serve in your generation. So that this verse does not disqualify anybody. Whether you've just graduated from high school or you've retired and you've been retired. I don't know what birthday you're celebrating, but this verse does not disqualify you because you are still in the process of serving your purpose from God to your generation. Your generation. And if I could have anything on my headstone or my tombstone, I would want it to be that. That I serve the purpose of God to my generation. And that's not easy. And that's not maybe something that you know, would just be something we would automatically do, because it's easy to get into the mundane, monotonous, and not really step out in that faith. But this morning, I want to encourage you to do that. I got to go to my uncle's memorial. He passed away and just a couple weeks ago. And he's an awesome guy, an amazing guy. He's my Uncle George and my Aunt Becky. And I have three sisters, so there's four of us. And my cousin, which is their daughter, she was an only child. So I was always going to her house. I'm like, you got, all your Barbies have hair? Because my sisters cut off all my Barbies' hair. None of your toys, you got the Barbie dream house? Well, you're lucky, because when you got four kids, nobody gets a dream house, okay? You get something in the suburbs, all right? But you don't get the dream house. And so I would hang out there, and my Aunt Becky, who has just this amazing sense of humor and probably where I get a lot of that, you know, having fun. She threw awesome parties because she was the only child, you know, all that kind of stuff. But she said something. My uncle was on hospice for about 3 months. And she said, a lot of times people see hospice, it's a death sentence, right? And so she was still working at the time, but she said those 3 months were so sacred. They were so sacred between her and her husband. Because when she got off of work, it wasn't so much about what are we eating for dinner and how are the kids doing and what bills do we have to pay like it's been over the last 25 years of marriage. But it was, let me just put down my stuff and sit with you. Because I don't know how long I have with you. And this is a sacred moment. And as a minister, we do a lot of memorials and we do a lot of funerals. And Ecclesiastes says there's more wisdom in the house of mourning than there is in the house of partying. Because when you sit in that and you hear that, wow, sacred moments, you start to think, what's really important? And my husband, I told him the story, and he was saying, yeah, isn't that how we should live life every day? And we should, but that's unrealistic. We're not going to live life like that every day. But if we can get in our hearts what's important for our purpose in life, what's sacred for us serving our generation, serving God in our generation, then we're going to have this significance radar that goes off in our life. When we see those destiny moments and those moments, those God moments, those sacred times, and we can say, God, use me. I know this is what's important. I know this is what I need to be doing now. I know this is a destiny moment, and I'm going to go ahead and jump in and serve you now, God, those sacred times. See, we all are going to die once, and we're going to stand before God. We don't get a second turnaround. We don't get a second chance. We're not reincarnated as anything else. This is it. And we stand before God, and there's going to be that white throne judgment where he's going to say, you are saved. Your name is written in the Lamb's Book of Life. Head on in there, and it's going to be amazing. And then there's going to be a judgment of our works as a Christian. This is not how I get saved, but this is how I live my saved life. So I get to present those works, and it's going to be tested by fire. And the things that were meaningful, that I served God with purpose, those are what's going to stay. So when I live my life and I have chances to back down and I have chances to quit, I keep before me those sacred times when I'm going to stand before God and offer it. And what's going to last? What's going to last? See, I could barely make it into heaven, and I could barely get in there. But I don't know about you. I want to get into heaven exhausted, a royal and glory and holy exhaustion where I have given God everything. And by grace, I give and present these things to him, my life to him. And girls, that's where we're at. I want to encourage you that that's what you get to offer to God. You may say, what's so significant about my life? Oh, girlfriend, you are reaching people that no one else can reach but you. You are raising children that no one else will raise but you. You are preaching with your life, and they are listening. And you are presenting that life to him. You're living your life with purpose. In order to serve God in our generation, we have to seize the God moments. We have to seize the God moments. How many of you enjoyed Robert Madu this weekend? Like, seriously. Like, I'm like, that's why I preach. That's why I preach, because preachers rock, and he rocked that pulpit, okay? And he said something that was really good. He said, all moments are not created equal. All moments are not created equal. There are destiny moments in your life that you need to seize. There are God moments that you cannot let pass by you anymore. And I want to preach to you. I want to preach you so strong this morning that you walk out that door and you seize every moment you can. I want to build you up so that you're not afraid of anything. When you see a moment before you, you don't remember your doubts. You don't remember your past. You don't remember your excuses, but you jump in and you seize that moment. See, not every moment is created equal. Do you remember the moment you met your husband? Women who are married. Do you remember that moment? I remember I was 15 years old, and Richard Dean Villanueva Jr. had curly hair, and he wore really big shorts. Yeah, it used to be big pants. Now it's really tight pants, so we'll see what happens in 10 years. But he wore these really big shorts, and he had a girlfriend. All right, girl's like, ooh, tell me more, girl, tell me more. Okay. And her name was Michelle. Okay. And she did not like me. Surprise, surprise. But there was, they dated for a long time. And then, and she's the one who brought him to church. And when Pastor Jim probably gave the altar call, she elbowed him and said, get your hand up. So it's really a glorious, holy story how Richard got saved. But they ended up breaking up because Richard had a destiny moment. Where is he going to go with God? They ended up breaking up, and she told him, you can date anyone but Michelle Sandel was my maiden name. And she thought I was going to steal her boyfriend. And I did, but that was not how it was, okay? It just happened. It just happened. And I remember these destiny moments of when we were at Pastor Dan and Jessica's wedding. And I was a bridesmaid, and he asked me to dance. He asked me to dance. So we went to go hold hands. Girls, it was not like this. It was like this. We interlocked fingers, okay? And that was a destiny moment. I remember we were in Bible college, and we had to write what are we going to do with our lives? And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing with my life. Am I supposed to marry Richard? Am I supposed to be in ministry? Where am I going in life? I don't know what I'm doing. And so on September 10th, we decided we're going to talk the next morning. Well, it was September 11th. Right, when the towers came down, and it was just the worst day ever in our generation that I can think of. And it was still a destiny moment because we still were able to talk about our future. You see, you have destiny moments in your life. Maybe you have a destiny moment of when you left a relationship. Okay, can I preach? Can I preach to the Inland Empire? You had a destiny moment when you realized that, you know what, God has something more for you. That you don't need to be in this relationship, but he has something better for you. Maybe when you got saved, I remember when I got saved, and it was on a Sunday night. It was the same altar call I heard for years and years as a teenager. I was backsliding, and there was literally nothing different, but something inside of me said, raise your hand, and I got saved that morning. Do you remember when you got saved? Do you remember what that felt like? Do you remember when the call of God was on you and you knew exactly what your purpose in life was? Maybe some of you have received that. I remember when I knew exactly that I needed to be an intern. I needed to graduate from high school and join an internship at a church that didn't pay me anything. Hello, you know you heard from God when you join an internship that doesn't pay you anything. But it was a destiny moment because it set up my life. When all the other young adults were leaving to go to college, I stayed here, and this is what God had for me here. It may not be the cookie cutter mold form that everybody did, but it worked for me. Those are the destiny moments I want you to think about. I want to read a story in 2 Samuel 23:20. About a man who saw a destiny moment. We don't hear the story very often. It's not usually, you know, in Sunday school or on the flannel board or something that a lot of people preach on, but it's very good. If you read it in 2 Samuel 23, it's talking about David's mighty men. And he had the top three, and then he had the next 30. And so, as if you've heard me preach for any amount of time, I love David's mighty men. If someone will just give me some money to produce a movie, I will produce so good this movie because I love them so much. But in 2 Samuel 23:20, there was also Benaiah, son of Jehoiada, a valiant warrior of Kabzeel. He did many heroic deeds, which included killing two champions of Moab. Another time on a snowy day, he chased a lion down into a pit and killed it. Once armed with a club, he killed an imposing Egyptian warrior who was armed with a spear. Benaiah wrenched the spear from the Egyptian's hand and killed him with it. Deeds like these made Benaiah as famous as the three mightiest warriors. He was more honored than the other members of the 30, though he was not one of the three. And David made him captain of his bodyguard. Let's break down this verse. Benaiah is walking on a snowy day, and he sees a lion. Now, to most of us, this is a very bad, bad, bad day. Like, you're almost thinking, how could this be a blessing from God? But Benaiah is walking through the woods, and it's snowy, and I don't know if they're wearing those, you know, old school chanclas or what, okay? But he's walking, and he hears a twig snap, and he looks, and he locks eyes with a lion in the distance. And can't you just imagine in slow motion, a breath just exhales from him. And his eyes dilate, and his adrenaline rushes, and they both lock eyes, and the lion and him begin to run, and they begin to run, and they chase each other. And you can see their breath because it's so cold. But then one misstep of the lion, he falls into a pit, and he's down. And what a logical person would probably do is begin to walk away. You can see him walking away. But instead, it's just a running start to literally jump in that pit and kill that lion. And you hear a struggle, and you can hear the lion roar, and then all of a sudden you hear nothing. And out of the pit comes out this scratched up, bloody hand of Benaiah, and he gets out and he has conquered this lion. He's won it. He jumped in the pit and he killed that lion on a snowy day. Now we could see this as bad luck, or we could see it as a destiny moment that God has set up and giving you the faith and the courage and the strength to conquer that. And that's what he saw. Because when Benaiah put in his resume to King David to say, let me be in charge. Let me be in charge of your bodyguard. Let me be one of the 30 men. I'm sure he saw many resumes, but he didn't see one just like Benaiah's that had him killing a lion in a pit on a snowy day. He needed that on his resume. He needed King David to see that. See, sometimes what we think is bad luck is God just setting us up for training for our future. He would not have been in the Bible. He would not have gotten that job. He would not have that honor had he not had the faith and courage to jump in and do that. And I bet you King David recognized something inside of him. He said, oh, he killed a lion? I killed lions when I protected my sheep. I killed lions and bears when they would come at my sheep. And I would take a rock out of my pocket and I would put it in the slingshot and I would twist it up and I would throw it at those lions. Don't you think God was preparing David for Goliath? Do you think that David prayed prayers of safety around his sheep? Don't you think he did that? Yet, there was an allowance for this lion to come in and prep David for Goliath. You see, girls, things that we can see as bad luck, a terrible, terrible day, something that you've gone through, can be used as training for your future. Whatever the devil meant for evil, God can use for good. Let him use it. Give it to him. It's time we start chasing lions as Christians. You see, being a Christian is not just about what we can't do. It's what we can do, girls. It's what we can do. Goodness is not the absence of badness. Goodness is not the absence of badness. Because there are plenty of people who call themselves Christians that are sitting back trying not to do any bad, and in the meantime, they're missing all the good. They're missing the God appointments. Those who simply run away from sin are half Christians. We've got to step up, and we can step up. It's inside of you. Our calling is much bigger than just running away from what's wrong. It's to chase lions. And that means going after a dream. That means forgiving someone. That thing that's holding you back, if you were to fall in a pit today, what's facing you? What's facing you that you need to overcome, that you need to jump on and take authority over it? Is it just your marriage flourishing and being vulnerable in your marriage? Have you shut someone out? You know, again, are you retired and you maybe you've put aside dreams that you've had and God is reawakening those? That's chasing lions. That's jumping in the pit. You know, in this room are two amazing women, and they don't know I'm going to use them as examples, but my friend Jessica Jordan, I saw her face somewhere. There she is, and she's doing this little wave. But she chases lions. It was her wedding anniversary, and her husband decided to go to Peru on a mission trip and preach to people. That's chasing lions. That's jumping in a pit. That's going out of the norm. No one needed to tell them to do that. They just did that. They jumped in, and she has amazing testimonies. If you see her, grab her and tell her to tell you them. You know, Tammy Hernandez, you know, she retired, and she went back to school, and she's graduating. Woo! Go, girl, get it. That's jumping in the pit. That's chasing a lion. That's going after your dream. That's enjoying life. God wants you to succeed more than you want to succeed. He wants you to do that stuff. He wants you to be blessed. I want to just ask you a question. Maybe following Christ isn't as safe and civilized as we thought. Maybe we've been praying too safe of prayers, which my sister, Reverend Beth, preaches all the time. Maybe we haven't been praying at all because we haven't stuck ourselves into faith situations. I'll tell you what, if I am running towards a lion, I'll tell you what, I'll be praying every step of the way. Every step of the way. But maybe the church isn't praying because we're running away from situations that God wants us to conquer. And it's easier for us to sit back and not pray at all. We avoid faith situations because it is our instinct to run. It is our flesh instinct to run. But our faith should be to conquer it. This Inland Empire needs this message. This Inland Empire needs this girl. The Inland Empire needs this girl. Your family needs this girl, and you are that girl. So today, I just want to give you a couple points on how to seize God moments. How to seize God moments. Benaiah had three specific ones. And in your life, you're going to remember and see and recognize those before you. You can think of some now. Man, that was so important that I said yes to that. That was so important that I said no to that. And my hope is that as you hear this, you will recognize them whether today, tomorrow, or 10 years from now. And you will say, you know what? I'm going to jump in. I'm going to jump in. I'm going to conquer that and seize that God moment. Last night, this whole week has been crazy busy. And last night, yeah, I felt like a good mom. I don't know if you ever feel like a good mom, which is timely for Mother's Day. But you know those moments you're like, I'm a good mom. I'm a good mom. And I was coming to youth. But before I came to youth service, I stopped by Crafton College. And I saw one of my kids, and when I say my kids, I don't mean biologically, I mean spiritually, that I've been able to raise up. I've been a youth pastor, I don't know how long, but maybe 15 years, I can't remember now. But it's been a long time that I've been serving in youth ministry. And so they're like my kids. And just like regular kids, it takes all within me to say, my babies! You're doing so good, right? Like, yay! Okay, but I stopped by Crafton Hills to see one of, I say, my kids, and her name's Alizé, and she was doing an outreach at her college. at her college. And I said, that's my baby, that's my kid, that's my girl. She's doing an outreach at her college, and at that same outreach, you know, and one's leading worship and one's preaching and one's ministering his music. And I just left like, yes. And then I came into youth and I walk in and I see another one of my kids, and she's leading worship and she's gonna record her own music and she's doing an amazing job. And I have one kid, you know, spiritual kid, what I'm talking about, is in New York, and he's prospering as a businessman. And I'm just so proud of my kids because they're chasing lions. Because I feel like this is what I want to raise. I want to raise kids who jump in the pit. And that's what I want to impart to you today. Impart to you that you have that power and that authority and that drive to jump in the pit. And as we raise our own children, it's easy to say, I want to raise my kids safe and protected and helicopter over them. But girls, are we called to raise safe kids? Or are we called to raise kids who jump after God, who don't have fear, who have faith? So how do we seize God moments? Number one is we need to identify with God and not your odds. We need to identify with God and not our odds. And I'm speaking to myself. Benaniah, if you read in 2 Samuel in the verses, it says in verse number 21, once armed with a club, he killed an imposing Egyptian warrior who was armed with a spear. Benaniah wrenched the spear from the Egyptian's hands and killed him with it. A club is also translated as a walking stick. What are the odds? What are the odds of a man walking with a stick, an Egyptian coming at him with a spear, and what are the odds of him being able to win? See, Benaiah identified with God and not his odds. He knew God was bigger. See, scaredy cats have a low view of God. They have a low view of God. But lion chasers have a high view of their Lord. They know where he sits. They know his authority. They know his power. Is God big enough to redeem you from your odds? Maybe from the neighborhood that you grew up in. Maybe from what that ex told you. Maybe from what you think of yourself as you beat yourself up with self-talk. Let God be bigger than your odds. Identify with your God and not your odds. Even if the odds are stacked against you, maybe you feel too young. Maybe you feel too old. Maybe you feel too poor. Maybe you feel too rich. I don't know what it is. Maybe you feel like you got the wrong skin color or the wrong gender because, hey, the guys, it's easier for them. But I want to tell you, girls, do not identify with your odds. Identify with your God. He's going to get you there. He's big enough. And this is what keeps us praying and attached to him and connected with him, is when we identify with God. Number two is we need to unlearn our fears and face them. We need to unlearn our fears and face them. Babies are born with two fears. Two fears, that's it. I don't know how they interview these babies. But this is what science tells us. They're born with the fear of falling and the fear of loud noises. And we learn all the rest. We learn all the rest of those phobias. We learn them. The photophobia, the fear of looking bad in pictures. That's real. We learn that. The fear of peanut butter getting stuck to the roof of our mouth. That is a true phobia. We learn this stuff. We've got to unlearn them. We've got to unlearn them. You see, a fear is literally like a weed inside of your garden. And if you don't face it and pluck it, it's gonna spread. And I wanna encourage you girls to face your fears, right? It's just like, is this God? Is this God? Face it, pluck it out of there. Because the scariest moments, those you facing that fear, could also be one of the greatest moments of your life with God. If you were to sit down and have coffee with Benaiah, and you were to say, what are the greatest moments of your life? I'm sure he'd take a sip of that latte, and he would tell you, you know what? I'd have to say chasing that lion, or beating up that Egyptian, or defeating that Moabite. I'd have to say it's those things. And then you were to say, well, tell me what the scariest moments of your life are. And I'm sure he'd look at you like, Exactly what I said. The scariest moments of my life were also the greatest moments of my life. Your greatest moments with God, stepping out in faith. Losing, I know it seems bad losing sleep, but girls, sometimes God needs us to step up and lose some sleep and pray and make a plan and work a plan for the kingdom of God. Step out and unlearn those fears. I remember the hardest time in my life is just as a 20-year-old, you know, and I didn't understand what to do with depression. I didn't know what to do with it. And that was the hardest moments of my life, but I will tell you that's the closest time I was with God. Because in those late night hours, I knew those Bible verses. I was reading that word. I was praying. I was singing those songs to Him in that personal time in my bedroom. And it's one of those moments that I do cherish greatly, because once you get kids, it is hard to have a moment at all. Hard to have a moment at all. But sometimes those hard moments are also those great moments with the Lord. And we've got to face those fears. Do you girls remember Cheryl Salem when she came in the summertime? You know, Cheryl just has every testimony in the world. Whatever testimony you can think of, she has it. Okay, she's done it. And we got to go to lunch with her, and it was really cool because she is just the same person on stage as she is off the stage. And so we're eating, and she, you know, she's eating her food, and we all have our food. And she's like, yes, this will be, because let me explain something. Cheryl is Miss America, okay, of like 1980 or something. So she is like super cute, just this little twig body, and she's just beautiful and gorgeous and kind and confident and all that kind of stuff. And so she's like, this will be my one meal of the day or something. Do you remember her saying that? I was like, right, me too. Is that what I'm supposed to be doing? Explains a lot, but she's just super cute. And she was talking about how she was afraid of water and she never learned to swim as a kid. And then she got pregnant, had a baby, and God told her, you need to start facing your fear, because one day that little boy is gonna wanna jump into that pool and you gotta go with him. So when the baby was little, she would have her husband hold the baby, and at night she would go into her pool and she would just kind of walk around in the pool, and she would begin to teach herself how to swim, and she would face that fear. Because if you know Cheryl, she's like, I'm not afraid of anything. I can't be afraid of anything. And girls, I want to encourage that spirit inside of you. Don't let fear control you. Face your fears. Are you afraid of the dark in that closet in the middle of the night? Then flip on all the lights and go look in that closet. Do it. Do it. Because we can't let the fear tell us what to do. Me and my daughter went on a mud run, and I think we have a picture of it. I think the guys have it up there. But we went on this mud run last weekend, right? That's our before picture. And then let's see the after picture, the mud. Like it was, look at, there's Bella. We're like, this is out there. It's so cold. And it was really fun, but there were portions. I think we did a kid's mud run, but I really think it was the adult mud run with just kids. I'm like, these are crazy obstacles. Like, it was like an A-frame with a netting. It was like a flat plywood with like 2x4s as steps, and you're climbing up this rope. And so the first one, Bella was scared. She froze at the top of this A-frame, and there's hundreds of people, and I was just like, you've got to do this. You know when you're like, sweet mom, and then you're like secretly like, you've got to do this right now. Like, you don't want anyone to see your face. And so I just had to walk her through it. And then we got to the next obstacle. I'm like, do you want to do this? And she looked at it, and you know, because I know you can do it. Here's mom. I know you can do it. I know you can do this. I know you can do this. And she went back. We were going to walk around, and she went back. She's like, no, I want to do this. And she did it. See, we need to raise our kids to face their fears, not run away from them. Face those fears. 1 John 4:18, there is no fear in love, for perfect love casts out fear. When we are in God, there is this empowering through the Holy Spirit and grace for you to live in that love, and that fear is casted out as you face it. God will empower you and give you the grace to do that. Number three, the last one is take a risk. Matthew 14:28. We've heard these verses many times, but I want to read them quickly. We need to take a risk. And in Matthew 14:28, this is the story of Jesus walking on water and asking Peter to come on out of the boat.
And it says, and Peter answered him and said, Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water. So he said, come. And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid and beginning to sink, he cried out saying, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said to him, O you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. And then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, truly, you are the Son of God. Peter was walking on water. And it could look like a failure, but I want to say this is a success. Because when you take a risk with God, and God tells you to do something, and you do it, even if you may feel like you fail forward.
Yeah.
We ought to have failing parties.
Right.
We ought to hashtag fail party. And every time you make a mistake, we're going to be like, that's right. We'll even slow clap for you. You tried it, girl, you failed, but I'm glad you did it. You tried, but you know what, you failed, but I'm glad you did it. See, I would rather sink than sit. I would rather listen to God than stay back and wonder if I should have done that. I would have rather tried and failed forward than to have done nothing at all. I would have rather be soaking wet than sitting down in my purpose with God in my life with numb butt cheeks and be like, you're gonna walk on water, he's gonna walk on water, she's gonna walk, and you sitting down with these numb butt cheeks, instead standing up and trying something for God, trying something for him. Do not listen to those in the boat. They don't have nothing to speak to you. They don't have nothing to speak to you because they speak from a position like this. When you're climbing out of that boat and you can't feel nothing below you but the power of God telling you to go forward. Don't let that girl who doesn't walk in a godly relationship tell you how to do marriage. She's sitting in the boat. She don't have nothing to say to you. Don't let that girl who tells you you can't witness to your friends like that, that's rude. She don't have nothing to say to you. She's sitting in that boat. Hello, let me talk to the single girls. That girl who's trying to tell you how to get a boyfriend. She's not living a pure life. She don't have nothing to say to you. You are walking in faith. Walk in faith and walk on that boat. Unless you are soaking wet in the ocean, then what do you have to say to me about what God told me? I'm not trying to be rude. I'm trying to tell you. I'm trying to tell you and tell myself that surround yourself with people who are walking on water. Lori, she's soaking wet. She's in the ministry. She knows what's going on. She lives a life of faith. Lori, you tell me. You tell me. This is why you need Women Rock. This is why you need your small group. Those girls to tell you, yes, marriage. Do it God's way. Live that life. Our greatest regrets will be those God-ordained risks we didn't take. It will be sitting in that boat. That will be our greatest regrets. We will regret sitting. We will regret it. But girls, let's not live like that. Let's fail forward. I want us to rethink church and Christianity. I want us to rethink why we're here. I want us to remember that even though we come to church to get built up, it is for a reason to go out into your workplace, into your family, onto the streets, into your school. Mark Batterson, and the message that I'm preaching, and I want to tell you at the end so it wouldn't hinder you, but it's from a book that changed my life. And we have a picture of it in case we're going to have it at the bookstore, I think, next week. You can download it on Audible, but it's by Mark Batterson. And this is kind of a remix version of his book. Some of his stuff, some of my stuff combined together. But if this message ministered to you, then download that book. Get it from our bookstore. But it changed my life. And he said, I'm concerned that the church has turned into a bunker where we seek shelter when we're actually called to storm the gates of hell. I'm going to read that again. I'm concerned that the church has turned into a bunker where we seek shelter when we actually are called to storm the gates of hell. And I hope I'm preaching life into you. I'm not trying to beat you up. I want to encourage you that there is more. There is more. And so many of us have engaged in that. And I want to tell you there's even more after that. I want to encourage you that there is level after level. This woman named Ann Dillard wrote this quote, and she wrote it in a poetic way. She writes short stories, and so she kind of wrote it in a poetic way, so I wanted you to hear that. But it says, does anyone have the foggiest idea what sort of power we so blithely invoke? Or, as I suspect, does no one believe a word of it? The churches are like children playing on the floor with a chemistry set, mixing up a batch of TNT on a Sunday morning. We don't know the power we hold with God. We don't understand what this can do. We don't understand that that purpose and that destiny that's already inside of you, it's already there. We have not the foggiest idea. The foggiest idea. It says, it is madness to wear ladies' straw hats and velvet hats in church. We should all be wearing crash helmets. Ushers should issue life preservers and signal flares. They should seatbelt us into the pews. For the sleeping God may wake someday and take offense, or the waking God may draw us out to where we could never return. God is alive, and he is awake. And he is ready to grab your hand, girl, and say, you follow me. I'm going to empower you to do exactly what your purpose is, honey. You're going to live a life like David, where you served God's purpose in your generation. He's going to empower you to do that because he is that God and he is so powerful. And we have just like that song say, just a glimpse of who you are. Just a glimpse of who you are has compelled us to sing. So girlfriends, you are overcomers. Whatever you're facing in that pit this morning, is it a bad habit, a bad decision? I've done quite a few of those. Self-doubt, irrational fears? Is it a past or current problem? I want to encourage you to overcome it, to jump in the pit with God and take care of it. Or are you in the pit with an opportunity? Are you in the pit with a God dream that he's placed inside of you? That you just know that you know that you know this is what you need to do. Then go after it. Chase after it. Because playing it safe is risky. Playing it safe is more risky than taking the risk. We've got to get the courage to go out there. And if you look at the story of the parable of the talents, and when the master dished out the talents, the one who took the risk to make the money is the one who got it. But the one who played it safe, sat on his talent, didn't multiply it, that was the one that was called evil. And sometimes we think we're being holy and reserved and meek by just sitting back and not doing anything. But maybe taking the risk is the heart of righteousness. And maybe righteousness has less to do with not doing anything wrong and more with doing things right. Righteousness is using our God-given talents to their God-given potential, and that requires risk. Maybe our view of sanctification is too sanitized, and maybe our view of Christianity is too civilized. That's from Mark Batterson. So girls, I want to encourage you, go after that God-sized dream, because our generation needs it. Our city needs it. Your friends and your family needs it. Your school campus needs it. You girls can do it. So did you girls get something out of that? All right.
Thank you for listening to the Rock Church and World Outreach Center. If this message spoke to you, please share it with us. We'd love to hear from you. You can find more information at www.rockchurch.com.